I'm off my game today.
No, you're not.
That's true.
People are going to have to start making better content.
I think we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
When you program for everyone, you program for no one.
I think it's that we're a purpose-driven platform. Like, we're trying to get to substance. How was that? Are you happy with that?
Yeah.
This is marketing therapy right now.
It really is.
What's up? I'm Laura Carenti.
And I'm Alexa Kristen. Welcome back to Adlandia, episode 13. So I think this is our lucky number. We said episode 11 was our lucky, but I think 13 is our lucky.
That was Corbin's lucky.
That's Corbin's lucky. This is our lucky. We have a very special guest today, Linda Boff, CMO of GE, my boss, your client.
And my client. And I think one of the things that people get to hear on this show from us is, you know, what we think is disruptive in the industry and where we see the white space and the opportunity. Linda's living it. And quite frankly, Linda's pioneered a lot of it.
A lot of it. And like, it's so funny because like, I was just talking to someone recently and they were saying, oh, we don't do RFPs anymore, requests for proposal, right?
Right.
And Linda, a couple of years ago, wrote this piece, RIP, the RFP. Which I loved and we loved.
We loved. We co-signed it.
We co-signed it. And I think that, you know, it's really easy to hear those headlines. It's easy to read those articles and see the outcome, right, of her decisions.
Right.
I think we're really lucky to sit with her and understand
what goes into it.
What goes into it, or at least get a glimmer of how she thinks about and who she thinks about being at the table while she's making those decisions.
So part one of our CMO Confidential series starts right after the break with GE CMO
Linda Boff.
We'll be right back. We're here with Total Girl Boss CMO Executive.
Our boss. Let's be honest.
GE, the one and only.
Linda Boff.
Welcome, Linda.
So great to be here. I love that this is episode 13.
It's a good, it's a lucky number.
It's
a number.
I think it's lucky. I love it.
And I'm also,
honestly, I'm so honored to be here. Oh, you please. Two are my heroes.
Oh, please. Come on.
So Alexa and I have spent a lot of time prepping for this interview, which is funny because
we don't usually do it.
Uh-oh, I feel like I'm totally on the hot seat.
No, because we know, obviously, having worked for you, we were going over it in our head the last 5 or 6 years very closely on a lot of the work that you've done. We feel like the industry has done a great job of covering and asking you questions about the work we've all done together. But what we want to use today for is to give people the side of Linda that people don't normally get to see, and like, what inspires you? Like, how do you embrace your leadership role and sort of the qualities that you look for in up-and-coming talent and those sort of things? So we're going to get right into it.
And also things that like make you tick as a CMO. So personal and how you kind of your view of the world. Because we know, Laura and I know, it's really unique, right? Because it was always so exciting to think about what does good look like to you? And you have always been this person who can identify, this is the direction and this is good. This is where we should go. How do you do that?
I really feel like this is a trio, right? We've worked together for six years or so. And I'm so unbelievably proud of what we've done. And when I think about it, I think part of why the body of work feels as good as it does to all of us is that I think we always start in the right place, which is, what is the user, viewer, listener going to attach to? And, you know, why is this going to get somebody excited? Why is somebody going to engage? What's going to be differentiated for GE, but not just differentiated for GE, right? Sort of bring to life the essence of who we are, but in a way that the person at the other end, whatever that end is going to find super inherently interesting. And I don't know. I think that's been our North Star, and we've come up with lots of ways that have gotten us there, whether it's unique partnerships. You know, we have so much fun thinking about where the industry's headed. You know, it's a tired expression, where the puck is going, but it's not tired the way we do it, right? We do it in a way of what's next. Yeah. And it's just, that's the great fun of what we do, is puzzling that out.
It's so funny. So, gosh, I want to say it was like probably 5 years ago, we were working on this 30 Rock thing. Do you remember this?
So super well.
And I still remember sitting in the office and you looked at me and Andy Goldberg, our creative director, chief creative officer now, and you said, this has got to be human and it's got to be really funny. We are funny.
Yeah.
This show is built about us and we're funny.
Yeah.
Right? And it totally changed how we approached everything. And I remember that day saying, not only is this a person who's kind of rewriting the rules in a, right, presumably B2B space, rewriting the rules in how do we actually question things? And Laura and I talk about this a lot on the show, is like, don't let your network or your media buyer or someone just hand you something and say, oh, that's okay, we're going to fill that space.
Right.
You question the space.
I remember, it's really nice of you to say, I remember a conversation, it has to be about 5 or 6 years ago. This one was with BuzzFeed, with Jonah Peretti, who's literally one of my heroes, probably same thing for both of you. And we were having this debate. It was early-ish days for BuzzFeed. And I mean, we all know what they're so great at in terms of how they frame their stories, et cetera. And the debate was, as brands were entering the BuzzFeed space, my feeling, and I think all of our feeling, was whatever a brand did had to be as good, if not better, than what was appearing on BuzzFeed.
Yes.
Because that's what you're up against, right?
Yes.
It's what's interesting.
What's amazing.
What's amazing. What's
Keith
funny.
Grossman, literally in our last episode, said it's only branded content when it's bad content.
Exactly.
Yeah. And we were like, somebody needs to tattoo that somewhere.
Really? I mean, branded content feels like a slur to me.
Yeah.
And I think it's an excuse to say, well, it's not as good. I mean, what's content anyway?
Yeah.
It's a great story. And we all want to be in that business of figuring out what makes a great story. And the bar I hold us to, and I know because you're my partners in all of this, is the highest bar.
Yeah.
Right? Not the highest bar for a brand, just the highest bar.
Yes. That is the
that
huge
is, that
differentiator
is a
in
huge
the market.
Differentiator yeah. in a leader to be able to see that talent. How do you do that? Do you think about it?
I think about it a lot. I mean, I would say, you know, I think about the work that we do and I think about the people who do that work. And they're really inseparable. You know, at GE, we have a really, really small team inside. And then we have some fantastic partners, and Giant Spoon's a fantastic partner, and BBDO and Vayner. And we have others that sort of come and go at different points. And it's one family, right?
Right.
I always think of it as kind of like Thanksgiving dinner.
I definitely spend more time with people in that all agency meeting on a regular basis than I probably do my own family. But you've created an atmosphere where there's this inherent respect, but at the same time, and I know you love this, like tension to get to the best idea. And I think a lot of people struggle in the industry with this idea. Do I need one agency that does everything? Do I need one agency to do one thing? And what does that look like? And you've kind of created this dynamic between, like you said, key stakeholders and then visitors, depending on the project. What was sort of the impetus in trying that? And do your colleagues at the CMO level talk about that in a world where the role of agency versus publisher versus everybody else who wants a piece of the pie is changing rapidly?
I mean, I've always felt as though you want the very best people around the table.
Yeah.
And they can be working at an agency, they can be working at a analytics company, they can be working at a platform. I've tried hard, and this part I don't think is easy. People get comfortable with who they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I think diversity of thought and tension is good, not bad, which is a funny thing because I'm very conflict averse. I don't like conflict. I don't like fighting. But I like
that. That's true.
I really
that's
don't.
A really
you know
honest,
that. Yeah,
we
it's a
totally
very
know,
honest thing.
Totally
I don't
honest.
Like fighting. Yep. I'm not a good fighter. Well,
I know,
I'm,
you
a, I'm an okay
out.
Fighter, but once in a while.
No, but you'd rather not deal with that.
I'd rather not deal with that.
Yeah.
That's
and
what I say. You send
time,
me out there.
You're a good fighter. I think that when you have people who come from different places, different perspectives, and who are willing to kind of debate for the sake of getting to a great place, that's what makes fantastic work. If you're debating about the people, that's bad, right?
Right.
Like that's where you get politics and conflict and bullshit.
Yeah.
You want to debate about how to get to a great place. And that's what I feel like we do. So when I hire people, have the opportunity to bring people on the team, everybody's different on our team. Everybody has a different background, different perspective. But there's certain character traits I love. Resiliency, you know, that ability to serpentine and get to or at least the possibility of yes.
Or I get think to is, fuck yes.
Can get I to say fuck, fuck yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah. Get to fuck yes, yeah. I think is super important. Yeah. The ability to win. I'm friendly with Gary Vaynerchuk. I love his winning spirit. I love his desire to figure it out. I like optimism. I think that's really important. Curiosity. Yeah. And people who Beth Comstock just had a fantastic Medium blog on this idea of the importance of useless information.
Yeah.
And I think people that have lives that have done an experience and traffic in culture or sports or gossip or EDM or food or fashion, you bring those things in. And that's what makes for really interesting, right? It's those cultural touch points that mix with innovation, that mix with technology, that help a 125-year-old brand, you know, stay relevant.
Yeah.
So I think it's those kinds of different points of view.
Maybe it's scientific, but I've watched you. So you talk about how all these people, you bring all these different people in and perspectives in. You really embrace them, though. And I've watched, like, it's almost this amazing thing, like the founder of 4chan.
Chris Poole. Great friend. And
who became a really good friend of yours and a great advisor to our team at times. And a contrarian.
But, you know, he's so thoughtful. So one of the things that Chris kind of helped with was who were people out there in kind of internet culture that we should just know and talk to and not even necessarily work with, but hear from. And I think, I mean, you guys are wonderful at this. Like, who do you hear from? Yeah. And how does that inform the work? Yeah. And sometimes it can be wacky. And by the way, sometimes it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes there's an idea out here and you just can't pull it in, even if you want to. But I, you know, as a brand, going back to the brand side, although we can talk about people, embracing our interestingness, our onlyness, whatever, it's not going to be just our machines. You know, our machines are great. We have the best machines in the world, but that's not what necessarily makes the best story.
That's right.
It's how other pieces come to bear that allow you to just put on a different set of glasses, a different lens, and approach it. And I think that's what our partners have been able to do. And I guess, Laura, even though I don't like fighting and I don't like conflict, I am incredibly comfortable with people around a table not being comfortable if I know we can get to a good place. And I think because I am collaborative by nature, I try to pull that out of people in the right way.
Is there, so I know this has been like a big topic of conversation and sometimes I laugh at it and sometimes I think about it. Like people talking about the role of CMO and how it's changing and how CMOs are new, the new CIO is the new CMO and da da da. I mean, what your point is like you can't forget the storytelling part, right? You can't forget the art part.
No, you need to capture attention and you need to capture demand.
Right.
And they're both important.
Right.
I mean, you know, we're at GE, one of the top brands in the world. It's, you know, our brand is responsible for, you know, 30% of purchase decisions.
Yes.
You can't take GE off a turbine or a locomotive or a wind turbine and have it mean the same thing.
No, brand opens doors.
Brand opens doors.
Yes.
I think that's the title of this episode.
Brand opens doors. But data, you know, what's that expression? A friend of mine years ago said, creative inspired, data informed. And I think that's still kind of true.
Yeah.
You know, you want an idea to live on its idea, but how do you not know what's knowable out there based on data?
I love that. Know what's knowable.
Know what's knowable.
And now we have the ability to do it even more.
Much more.
Yeah.
So one of the things I think that people in this industry, A, email us a lot about, B, question what the hell our strategy is, and C, We just tell them to wait and see. But this idea that we are not a business that relies or has relied on in quite some time on programmatic. We are not a brand, I'm speaking on behalf of G, that focuses.
I was wondering about the way. So sorry.
This is real partnership.
I was thinking,
this
which
is real
way?
Partnership.
Atlantia way, the giant spoon way.
But okay. The GE way.
The GE way. Yes. Yes.
Sometimes it's hard to separate myself. Alexa reminds
please
me.
Please never do. You are absolutely a family member.
But one of these things where I think what you're getting to is like data is a part of the story. It's not the story. Yeah. And we've seen people take data and engage in bad behavior with it. And one of the things we've talked a lot about in our circle of beating things up and developing strategy moving forward is that for us, programmatic, when you're like, G doesn't have an awareness problem. And we're certainly not selling you wind turbines through banner ads. And we instead pivoted left when everybody else was going right and said, we're going to focus on attention. We're going to think about impact. And we're going to tell this story in ways that are new and exciting and embrace technology to do it. A lot of people, when we kind of went out and said death to the RFP, we went out and said, you know, we're going to spend over 80% of our budget in live programming.
We're not doing upfronts.
Looked at us like
we're not doing upfronts.
I love that. When you came in, you're like, we're not doing upfronts. We're all like, thank God.
Never made sense to me.
No.
I mean, maybe if our budget was, you know, $1 trillion and you had to find a way, but it's just never made sense to me that at a time where you can market in real time that you'd lock your dollars in, you know, 8 months ahead of time to something that may or may not work.
There's That's another totally point. Off
There's
the
another,
shelf.
Yeah, exactly. There's another point of view. Yeah. But I mean, I think together we've created, I mean, I've used this expression before, sort of the Etsy of marketing, right? Yeah. Bespoke, hand-stitched, you know, tenderly, lovingly, carefully.
Totally thought through. Yeah.
Who do we want to work with? Mm-hmm. What are they doing? What is Mike doing? Or what is Ozzy doing? Or what is the New York Times or BuzzFeed or Bloomberg? All great partners at the right time for the right thing.
Yep.
Not a checklist.
Yep.
But a really thoughtful kind of, what's the opposite of a checklist? The opposite.
This is a smart curation. I mean, it was just a smart curation at the time, right?
Yeah.
My mom tells me you have friends for a reason, a season, and a lifetime, and I like to think of our media partners in the same way.
I love that.
I've never heard that before. You've been holding out on me. A reason, a season, and a lifetime.
Yeah.
I love it.
So when you go out and you make these big bets, when you talk about we're going into live, like the hell with the upfronts, all of this stuff, like, do you get reaction from people in unexpected places, or it's kind of like everybody's like, I'm going to watch and see what happens over here?
I mean, are you talking to people?
Yeah, it's such a good question. I cannot remember a time in terms of our body of work, whether it was going to live or going on certain platforms first or doing what you guys created, pressing sort of, you know, inspiration
before
its time, but still a great idea. And thinking, as much as I respect, you know, and have a ton of respect for so many colleagues, going and saying, hey, what do you think? So I trust you guys. I trust the team. I trust our partners. I trust our behavioral instinct. I trust the user. I trust sort of what's going to be appealing. And if it's part of a trend that's good, great. If it's not part of a trend, who cares if it's the right thing?
Right.
And live was so the right thing when we started 5-6 years ago. It was really more or less before the onslaught of binge viewing and people saying, okay, you know, I'm really not going to watch television. I'm going to watch Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah, it was way before.
And we said, you know, for us, given that our budget is discrete, let's go where we know there's a much greater chance of getting people's attention.
Yeah.
Right.
In a way, wasn't it that simple?
Yeah. No, I can't wait for people to see what's next.
Well, so that's a big question. So you were early on in the digital space, you were the CMO of iVillage, right? A digital native brand.
But one of the original portals.
What's next? Like, what's the next big wave in marketing and advertising? And it's not a wave. It's just like, how are we going to live?
So two thoughts. The first is I think it was easier for me to come back to GE Corporate after being at iVillage with a different point of view because I lived it. I lived at iVillage, a site that really was so community focused.
Yeah.
Now it was creaky old message boards where people were communicating with each other. It wasn't Facebook or Twitter or Snap or anything else, but it was a lesson to me that people want to talk to each other versus just, you know, look at the pretty painting. So it was just an invaluable lesson to kind of bring back. And I've never forgotten it, right? You know, in terms of behavior. I think a ton these days, and maybe appropriately as we sit here at talking on Adlandia about audio voice podcasting.
Yeah.
I think we should all obsess about voice.
You're here. We agree.
Not just because we all three have sultry voices,
yes,
but because I think voice is, we see it all the time, you know, Google Home, Alexa, in your kitchen, starting to be in every room, starting to be in cars. So, you know, what does it mean to be a brand on voice right now? I think it's both late and early. I'm hoping it's more early than it is late, and that if you're a brand like GE or Dove or Citi or you know, Taco Bell or Dunkin' or whomever, there's a place right now to think about what is your agency, if you will, on voice. What is it when somebody asks Alexa, Amazon Alexa, or Google Home a question, or is looking for information, is there a role we should or could be playing there? It almost reminds me, because I've been around too long, of the early days of search and domain, and what do you stand for, and you know, who's buying what domains. So I think we need to ask ourselves as brands, what do you stand for on voice? And it's not all glass half full. I mean, I think voice is also challenging for brands. You know, what's the role of brand if visual is stripped out? Now, I don't think it'll be binary. I think not everything will go to voice. But to me, that's what we should be focused on. I think that's really important.
So as you're looking,
what do you guys think? What's the big thing?
I mean, yeah, I think that the idea of ambient and like this always on interaction is going to happen. We talk a ton about program life. Corbin and I did a whole thing actually about program life, that your life, essentially, you're going to give AI some kind of decisions, right? You're going to tell them. So we talk about this all the time. Amazon only buy, you know, toilet paper.
I just ordered my first Dash buttons. Do you have those in your house?
Of course I do.
Yeah.
I just got them for the first time and I have too much toilet paper now because I'm obsessed with just that it comes. You don't have to think about it.
I just spend time going
to Target just to get those little utility things.
Anymore.
And now it's just there. I just
But guess
hit the button.
What you're getting? What brand are you getting?
Cottonelle.
That is it. And so you're all of a sudden locked into a brand. So what I think brands are going to have to work harder. We're going to have this like amazing like opening, right? Where people can interact with brands from an audio standpoint and an ambient standpoint. But then you're going to start telling, you know, is it, you know, Amazon essentially that you want to only buy X or you only want to interact with X. All of a sudden that narrows significantly.
It's such an interesting topic. You know, when you make that first choice of Cottonelle, you know, does that then become your default and you never switch?
That's right.
Because Amazon has gotten to know you and,
They recommended that to me, which is bizarre. Right. I don't know.
When Amazon has the Amazon brand, their generic brand or what have you?
Which feels like it's not too far into the future.
Feels like it's not too far into the future. The other one, you know, I think it's always interesting to think about, you know, the zig to the zag. Mm. So we were, again, having this conversation earlier today, you know, in a world that is so ephemeral. What does slow look like?
Yep.
And, you know, there's an appeal to slow. And I, you know, Live Earth, great example.
Yep.
You know, how many people tuned in to watch the birth of this little baby
giraffe? Yes.
So many, many.
But, you know, you sort of think, you know, when everything's so fast, is there an appeal to slow?
And so this is my answer to your question.
And physical all of a sudden becomes more important.
With attention and impact becoming increasingly narrowed, and the idea that there's presumably more content available on a daily basis than we could possibly consume in, I don't know, 365 days at this point.
That's right.
What does traditional media, and by that I mean places like print, things like terrestrial radio, out of home, I'm placing big bets on out of home and experiential marketing because they are places that are devoid of noise. And so I actually had this conversation with the women from Fastco the other day saying they were pitching a couple of unique ideas. And I said, I have to be honest, this is the first time in my career I'm saying I'm actually not interested in digital first. Because what you're selling, how am I getting people there? How am I keeping them there? Is it more compelling to get the right audience in front of this magazine profile that is, I can touch it, I can feel it, it's undisrupted? And so, you know, these are things that we can go around and debate till kingdom come. But I think it's interesting that starting to think of digital as traditional and difficult to break through on, without the mechanisms like targeting and live and all of these things, as ads on.
I think what you're describing is human nature in some ways, psychology major coming out, which is, when does something become white noise?
Yeah.
And when it becomes white noise, do you need to pivot somewhere else?
Right.
You know, there are times, where I think a print ad is absolutely fantastic. You know, a month or so ago at the Paris Air Show, GE, had $31 billion with a B dollars of orders, jet engine orders, and we took out a print ad in Barron's. Best place in the world. We could have done
Communicate
that. I think terrestrial radio is a great example.
Local radio,
example.
Yeah.
So I think the hard part is, you know, the pendulum's always going to be swinging.
Right.
And I think it's where can you stand out with differentiation and context.
Right, and value
value exchange, exactly. Like, none of us want to be in the business of interrupting. So I'll give you an example. I deliberately let my Spotify membership lapse because I wanted to hear what it was like not to be a member. And it's gruesome. And I love Spotify and I support them. But the message I get as somebody who's on not the premium, but the normal
ad supported
is don't listen to an ad. Do anything you can not to listen to an ad. Oh, I guess you have to listen to this ad. Now, I'm exaggerating, but always about this idea of, you know, if you want to skip this ad, do X, Y, Z. And it's just this strange thing as a marketer that this is all about, please skip this ad, please skip this ad. So if it feels as though it's something that's bad content, going to interrupt you, none of us want to be in that game.
Right. Yeah. I think we've made it our business
we've made it our business to do anything but. It goes back to that bar.
Yeah. Right.
What's the highest possible bar? And that becomes our new standard.
Yeah,
and I don't want to be in the business of training people to hate advertising.
I love that. So, Linda, we talk a lot about failure at GE, right? You and Beth have done an amazing job talking about...
You have permission slips.
We've done an amazing job failing.
No. I don't think so. But
I don't either.
But
not Beth.
No, neither of you. But I think that it's a really hard thing to grasp, you know, understanding how to succeed at failure. And, like, did you have to, like, train? I don't want to talk about what that looks like for you, but did you have to train yourself to rethink? Because you're a thinker, obviously. To say I'm going to stop my Spotify subscription just so I can listen to the ads, just so I can experience something like the B side, the different side. It is the B side. So, like, and failure is the B side, right? It's the side we don't want to see. It's the side we don't want to hear. How do you train yourself to be comfortable with that?
You know, look, it's a journey. I'm not sure anybody gets super comfortable with it because I think many of us, we're competitive, right?
Yeah.
Competitive to win. I'm not competitive with other people, but I'm really competitive when it comes to our work doing extremely well. Well, I'm probably competitive with a few people, but nonetheless. So, you know, the idea of embracing failure, I think to me, the way I try to get my head around it is, when something doesn't work, it's about interrogating the idea, not interrogating the people.
Yeah.
And there's a really big difference. I actually learned that lesson from Dave Laurie on our team, who's just an old soul.
Oh, he's going to love that. He got the shout out.
He's an old soul.
He's a company man.
He's amazing. And he said that to me in some meeting, right? Of, you know, it's about the idea. And so I think
I'm going to remind him of that in the next call we have together.
But Dave, like, he rises above.
Yeah.
And I think you have to rise above because everybody loves their idea. I love my ideas.
Yeah.
And I think when you make it about, well, this is bad, it's hard not to take it personally.
Right.
So I think you have to give space for it to be about a concept. And
that's a really good answer.
I think that's sometimes it's that simple.
Yeah.
And I think you have to have some rituals. Mm. Right. The startups, I know this is something I learned from Chris Poole. I think a startup ritual or postmortems. We probably don't do enough of that. But I think when you do them in the right spirit, they're really healthy.
Like not call them a postmortem.
We need a new name postmortems.
We'll crowdsource that.
Yeah, exactly. Atlandia.
Atlandia, please,
listeners, give us another name.
So, Linda, of all the work that you've done that everybody admires and you've put out in the world and you've disrupted the industry, what are some of the brands or most memorable ads that you can recall in the last few years that you've looked at and said, now that's changing things?
Yeah. You know, there's so much good work. And yet I think at the moment where you say, what's the best? Everybody says, huh, what was the best? Things stand out. I thought the Volvo splits was really clever because it was just an original concept.
Van Damme.
Yeah. Van Damme. I thought that was clever at the time they did it. I love the Sapphire work, but I think that's a value prop around a card more than it is. I think it was just a fantastic value prop when they put it out there and it did exceedingly well. I've loved some of Google's stuff when they've done great work. You know, often the product just speaks for itself, but yeah. I think they've done some great stuff over time. I don't know. What do you guys love?
I'm so hard on work.
I'm hard on work, too.
I mean, I think everybody talks about this, but for me, I think what Red Bull has built is so phenomenal and so right. And I think that some of the work that they've done with, like, Stratos was genius and not replicable. Right. By anyone else.
Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, it was so bold. The girl at Wall Street. Fearless girl to me was, I know it's been overhyped, but I thought it was simply brilliant.
I agree.
Right? I love the super line simple. I read a reporter wrote. It was the one piece of marketing that said something without having to say anything at all. And I thought that was a really, really captivating way of, you know, putting something around a piece of marketing. I think and I talk about it way too much at this point, they should be giving me free classes. But I think what SoulCycle has been able to do from a brand identity standpoint without having to collaborate or kind of step outside from a paid standpoint for that brand has been something that I've always admired. I mean, two women that found a market niche and a consumer need, as Alexa pointed out in our last episode. It's like, don't do something to make money, do something to solve someone's problems.
Yeah, no, I love that one too. And, you know, we talked about Spotify earlier. I actually think their out of home, Seth Farbman and Amy Farris's work was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm,
when that launched, I thought it was just like right on the money.
Such a smart use of
such
local.
Such a smart use of local and sort of finding a way to use data to make their point. I thought that was when they launched, I presume it's still going, although I don't know. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. That's smart.
Yeah. Cool. So those are a couple.
Can I ask one last question?
Yeah.
What's your go kick ass? If you were like, I'm going to go.
What's your soundtrack?
What's your Linda Bob soundtrack?
It doesn't have ads.
Soul.
That we know.
It doesn't have ads.
I tried that.
No, it has great ads. when you're I'm going to get pumped or I'm going in to box someone.
Eminem.
What?
Yes, I love that. That's what I was looking for.
Without hesitation.
That's what I was looking for.
Eminem, if I'm boxing.
8 Mile Buff. 8 Mile Buff. I love it.
Don't count her out.
That's amazing. All right.
So we have to play our
favorite game.
Okay. So it's good.
It's very easy. What would you kill in the world, right? Not people, not bunnies, right? No, but what in the world of advertising, marketing, technology, what would you kill? What would you buy? Because you're like, we need this. I want this. And what would you do yourself?
DIY.
Kill, buy,
do.
DIY. It's our version of kill, fuck, marry.
Yeah.
Kill all pop-ups.
All right. Pop-ups are dead.
Pop-ups are dead. Yes. I don't know who benefits from them. Buy. I always want to buy the unbuyable.
Yes, you know,
the conversation I feel like we always have with people in the media. What's for sale?
Yep.
I want to buy what's not for sale.
Well, we go in and say, we're going to.
And then we buy
this.
It.
Yeah. Do. So do as in start.
Yeah.
Or what's out there that you're like, I could have done this myself.
I have yet to find, and you guys tell me if you've seen it, a culture app that works for me. So I feel like with my data exhaust, with the amount of exhaust that I put out there in terms of what I'm looking up and searching for, nobody has created that definitive culture finder that says, okay, Linda, we know you love to read, watch, go to, and here it is.
It's all findable.
I have such a data breadcrumb out there. It's not even a breadcrumb. It's like loaves of bread. It's a bakery. I have a data bakery out there. So somebody can find it and serve me absolutely fantastic content. That would be worth it.
I love that. Linda Boff.
This has been so awesome.
A friend.
So fun.
A mentor. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming down.
Such a treat. Happy 13th episode.
Yay.
And if people want to find you, but with, you know, good guardrails, please don't bombard Linda. Call me first. How can they get in touch with you?
I look at everything all the time. I'm on Twitter, Linda Boff, linda.boff@ge.com. I say that wincing just a teeny little bit.
You should wince.
But
yeah.
I'm easy to reach. You know, laura.corrente@giantspoon.
That's
filtering all
request
people. Well, Linda, thank you so much.
Thanks.
This
it's
has been
pleasure.
A pleasure.
Thank you both. It was so much fun.
We'll see you tomorrow. If we weren't going to thank anyone, but still had to thank someone, we would thank Cameron Drews, our producer.
Who, by the way, is looking so comfortable 13 episodes in. I mean, this guy looks like he's been doing this forever.
It's because we have him on tranquilizer.
Deal with our craziness every week.
Big thanks, Matt Turk.
Who, by the way, he finally called. He'll be in New York next week.
Oh, he's coming. Our executive producer, Matt Turk.
Yeah. Andy Bowers.
And all of our family at Panoply.
Thank you. And a special thanks to our colleagues. I think this is the time and place to give thanks to our colleagues at GE, who have been tremendous support system, all the agency partners we work with, and certainly Linda Boff for taking the time out of her busy schedule to come by and hang out with us in Atlantia.
Thanks, everyone. We'll be back in 2 weeks
with an all-new episode. Full disclosure, our opinions are our own.